Right, if the council prepared, we will move to the second case on the calendar, United States versus Mitchell. We'll hear from the appellate.
Morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Jonathan Byrne. I'm here on behalf of James Mitchell, the defendant below. This court has held that in cases involving warrantless searches, the burden of proving that those searches comply with the Fourth Amendment is on the government. It is not on the defendant to show that such searches did not comply with the Fourth Amendment. In this case, the district court erred in concluding that the government met its burden, and I think that error shows up in one of two ways. One is sort of the best case for the government, which is the information that the officers were relying on came from reliable sources, or at least sources with some indicia of reliability, but that information still did not suggest that there was reasonable suspicion that criminal activity was afoot. The worst case for the government is that there is no evidence that these sources were reliable, in which case there's also no reasonable suspicion. We think the court can rule on either ground and vacate the district court's denial of Mr. Mitchell's motion to suppress. Without conceding anything about the reliability of the sources, I want to start with the reasonable suspicion analysis, assuming that those sources were reliable. Even reliable sources have to provide the police with information from which they can determine that criminal activity is afoot, or have reasonable suspicion that criminal activity is afoot. And the information that the police officers who stopped Mr. Mitchell were working from here do not show that.
So to put this in context, the law has evolved to a point where to stop an individual, you have to have a reasonable suspicion that criminal activity is afoot, or observe it, something in that neighborhood. And then there must be particularized facts. Why don't we just talk about the facts that the government contends supports that reasonable suspicion? That seems like to me to be the central, if not only, issue in this case.
Certainly, Your Honor. And this case, it originated with a fight at a bar in Huntington, West Virginia at closing time. And police were responding to that fight. And there was also information that there was a black man wearing red pants who had a gun and who was walking away from the bar. He was walking down Fourth Avenue.
Had a gun. What does that mean?
Well, that was the report, that there was a man with a gun.
Was there also someone who was on the ground? Someone had been assaulted on the ground, and someone heard someone say there was a gun.
There was someone who was knocked down in the fight, but there's no linkage between the fight and the man with the gun. There was no information that the man with the gun was involved with the fight, that he broke up the fight because he said, "Hey, you knuckleheads, I've got a piece," or anything like that, that he was waving the gun around, just a black man, red pants, with a gun, walking away from the bar.
What was the nature of the assault?
No, go ahead, you're good.
I'm sorry, Aaron?
What was the nature of the assault?
I'm not certain that we know what the nature of the assault was.
Just reported there was an assault.
There was a fight at the bar at closing time. The testimony from the officers was that this is not an unusual occurrence, apparently in Huntington generally, but specifically at rehab.
Go there.
Be careful. You got there are people on this panel in our court who might not like that.
This panel's okay.
Yeah.
That'd be a problem.
That's right.
Judge, you have a question. Go ahead.
No. I think the point you're talking about. I mean, you at least on the call information that was received, and I realize that's we then have the bystander information later, but the call said that there was a fight. There was someone with a gun who was that gun was. Noticed or seen by the person who reported the fight, and that someone was knocked down or knocked out. You're correct. There's nothing that said they hit him with the gun, but that gun was observed in connection with the report of the fight and the person being knocked down. And then Officer Howard, when he gets there, is told by a bystander of the description of a black man with a black shirt, red pants, walking east, I think, on the street. So that's the connection, that the gun was reported in the same report of the fight and the person being knocked down. Is that correct?
It's correct that the initial report of the gun came out of the same report that there was a fight. I don't believe it's correct that there was any indication that anybody saw the gun. This is part of where we get into Officer Howard's testimony, which Officer Howard was very upfront about the fact that he basically can't remember anything about this night. And so we don't know from the bystander whether he saw the gun, whether the man said he had a gun, whether two or three other people reported that the guy saw the gun. So I don't think we can draw that link.
Or his exact words. I don't know why. Maybe I was thinking of other cases that someone had seen the gun, but now that you bring it up, I think it did just indicate he had.
Had, I believe is the word, Your Honor, yes.
Which I guess in West Virginia, a lot of folks could have a gun, but...
Well, that's true, Your Honor.
There's, you're getting in trouble. It's true in North Carolina too.
Yes.
So if I understand your point, and probably it's a parsing out of details, and we've had interesting cases that we had the Robertson case that dealt in which the stop itself was determined to be legal under Terry because he had a broken taillight, but here. What the government will have to come forth with is the particularized fact that gives a basis for stopping this individual fighting. If you would say he was in the fight and you were coming at it is, and maybe the government can articulate, but I guess your point is it can't just be you have a gun.
That's correct, right? And that he was at the scene of a fight.
With a gun.
Yes.
Because you can be a lot of people at the scene, but you didn't stop him. The only reason you stopped this guy is he had a gun. He could have reported there were several other people. But the question is, why did you stop this particular guy?
Correct. It would
have been for the red pants. I would have done it for that. But.
Yes, Your Honor. I think that's a good point. And I'm glad you brought up Robinson because that's a situation where the defense in that case, when it got to the en banc review, conceded both that the stop itself was proper. It was a traffic violation. I can't remember what the traffic violation was. But they also agreed that there was reasonable suspicion that the gentleman there was armed. So the question there really was limited to, if we know he's got a gun, can we pat him down otherwise?
Oh, yeah, they saw him with a gun in the place. But that became, and I wrote a concurrence in that and jumped all over me for saying it, but it was the gun. It was the big deal. Anybody else wouldn't have meant anything.
That's true, Your Honor, yes.
Maybe I didn't articulate that strong enough, Dave. Maybe but, like I said it. I wasn't the one to say it.
So your argument seems to be because there's not specified information about how the gun was used in this incident, that's not enough. Is that correct? Because, I mean, there's clearly... They identify Mr. Mitchell, you know, particularly with information and where he's going. But your position is because neither the bystander nor the previous report said specifically how he was using the gun or what he was doing with it, that doesn't even satisfy the standard we have for a Terry stop.
Correct, Your Honor. And I think also we have to take into account that when the officers actually rolled up on Mr. Mitchell, they didn't report any observations that might corroborate that some criminal activity was afoot. They didn't suggest that he was running away from the scene, that maybe he was looking back over his shoulder, that when he saw the police, he changed direction or anything like that. And so there's just nothing in his conduct that night that we know of that suggests criminal activity was afoot.
Well, I guess it's the criminal activity afoot. And because I throw out the thought process, and I think that limits it, that language, that this thought process, that is, individuals have rights to carry guns, which is, that's undisputed. But if you choose to carry one, they, at least from the expectation point of view, you should expect that you're going to be scrutinized and perhaps even stopped if you have a gun, because it's a dangerous instrumentality. But it's the criminal activity afoot that I guess you hang your hat on, because there's nothing criminal about carrying a gun, particularly if there's a concealed weapon state that's involved.
Yes, Your Honor, and I think that's where I go back to Robinson, because in that case, the defense conceded that the stop itself, the seizure of Mr. Robinson, was complied with the Fourth Amendment. It was a question of the pat down, and here we are not conceding that. It's the stop itself that is the issue.
Yeah, that's a distinction.
I'm sorry. Do you agree that the call-in report, while maybe not sufficient in and of itself, can be considered as part of the totality along with the information from the bystander?
I think to a certain extent, but I'm not sure how much weight it can be given, because the officer who stopped Mr. Mitchell said he got all the information on the identity of the person with the gun and that the gun existed itself from Officer Howard.
But all the officers, including Officer Howard, had, by virtue of the dispatch information, something consistent with what's in the narrative on JA-139, correct?
I think that's correct, Your Honor, yes.
Thank you.
We'll give you a little time in rebuttal and come back and pick up on the points.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. Mm-hmm.
Hear from the government.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. I'm Joseph Adams. I'm appearing on behalf of the United States today. Your Honors, in this case, there was a sufficient reasonable suspicion that there was criminal activity afoot. And that's not based solely on the face-to-face tip that was given to Officer Howard. This is not a simple case of a man with a gun. This Court has, of course, seen cases in the past where it's solely a report of a man with a gun, but when this Court considers the totality of all the circumstances that were at play, it's more than a simple case such as that. When you consider the totality of the circumstances, the Court should initially look at the call that was placed in that had officers responding to the bar in the first instance. In this case, there was a call from Jim Smith. He calls in. It says that there was a large bar fight. I would suggest that this is not even a typical bar fight.
What does it mean, a large bar fight? Well, everybody is one of these things you see in the old Western place where they're just having a free fall.
Well, in the record, Judge, you can see that there was some specific information given. That is, the caller, Mr. Smith, reported there were approximately 30 people that were involved in this bar fight. So the Court does have some specific information about the fight. Beyond that, as was noted in the CAD report that was admitted below, in conjunction with that report, there's a report that someone is heard saying that they have a firearm. So there you have the report of a firearm. And then, as the Court's already noted,
use those words. They said had a gun, didn't they? Something like that. Or did they say firearm?
I believe the CAD report specifically says gun.
Yeah.
But there is a report that there is a gun at the scene.
Let me understand. We got a free-for-all fight, about 30 folks fighting each other. And how many people were arrested?
There was one defendant arrested, and that's the defendant in this case, unrelated
to... None of the other folks involved in the fight were arrested or stopped or anything?
The record does not contain any information that there were any arrests that stemmed from the fight.
So we have this criminal activity, which is this huge fight that's going on. Everybody's fighting, about 30 folks in it. Nobody gets arrested but the defendant. And why does the defendant get stopped?
Well, the defendant is stopped based on, again, the reasonable suspicion that the officers had.
That's a conclusion. I want to hear the facts. Why was the defendant stopped? You got 30 folks here, all of them throwing It looked like I would have loved to seen that fight on a camera. I wish you would send the video up here. You know, I'd like to be entertained by those old things. Not good, but but anyway, you got to – I'm just seeing haymakers and everything, throwing it all over this place, cheers. But you got this big fight, 30 folks, defended is stopped. I understand the reasonable suspicion, particularized, that's conclusion. Why was he stopped?
The defendant, Judge, was stopped based on the information that was given once Officer Howard responded to the bar. And that's the thing.
I want to come back.
Yes,
sir. I
want
to hear, not based on the information given, I want to hear the information. What is the fact that caused them to stop him?
The tipster at the scene provided a description of the defendant. It was a specific description.
Not guilty for being black with red pants. So what else did he have? That's not a crime. So tell me what it is about the defendant that made him stop him.
The tipster also reported that the defendant was leaving the scene with a firearm. That report of the firearm helps.
Right there.
With a gun.
So he left. He had a gun. Is that why he was stopped?
That plus the totality of all the circumstances,
that's,
which is the initial
conclusion.
Call.
And I know I see it in opinions all the time, but it's nice to go out and use this. It's something we get away with. It's totality of circumstances, reasonable suspicion. It must be based on sound, particularized facts. And the totality of the circumstances, no matter how you look at it, it's an all-out fight. And there's nothing wrong if... Let me put it this way. If he did not have a gun, would he have been stopped?
I think in this case, he could have been stopped if, based on the description that was provided at the scene by the bystander, as well as...
Black man with red pants.
If
and he can be stopped. What else? Anything else?
The information contained in the initial call. And the officers are responding...
Again, I'm not trying to be arguing. I'm trying to get the facts. Because it's easy to say the information in the call, and that's muddled. That doesn't mean anything. I want to know what it is he said that makes it relevant to stop this particular man. Because you got 30 folks in there.
Judge, the district court found that a reasonable officer could conclude that this defendant was involved in a fight, and the person that provided the tip at the scene... would have observed the gun.
So the information was that this defendant was involved in a fight, or he was the fight, or I thought it was a 30-person, everybody fighting deal.
Well, the initial report was that it was a large fight, and it did involve 30 people. But again, the district court found that it would be reasonable for the officers responding to conclude that this defendant was also involved in that, and that the person who provided this tip to Officer Howard observed that gun. And that's based on the face-to-face nature of the tip, as well as the specifics that were provided by the tipster to Officer Howard. The reasonable suspicion in this case centers around this fight. That's what brought the officers to the scene to begin with. And the information about the gun...
Reasonable suspicion of what?
That this...
Centers around the fight. You said the reasonable suspicion centers around the fight. Reasonable suspicion of what as to this defendant?
When the call came in, the call was upgraded from a simple fight to an assault victim. The information that was reported to officers who were responding is that there was a victim that was knocked out laying on the ground.
Yes.
So the officers, as they're coming to the scene, that's the information they have, and they are told that this is a violent brawl, essentially.
So if I'm there, let's say, or someone's there, I don't think, was there any testimony that this particular individual was actually involved in the fight?
There's nothing in the record that says this defendant was expressly involved in the fight, Your Honor. No.
Could have been a bystander. Could have been. Is that correct? Unlikely. You got 30 folks. He probably was involved in the rest, but he could have been, right? I'm not trying to be argumentative. I'm just trying to find out what it is the tipster said. And I don't see anything that says that this man was involved in that fight.
The reported information about the firearm is important in this case because it helps identify and link this.
I'm troubled by that. That the fact that someone can carry a gun and can carry it legally whether it's a bystander or even a fight. You could have a gun and still be in the fight, but it's not legal, the gun itself, unless you want us to articulate something like that. And a lot of folks don't like us to say that. I don't know how you escape in this case. This is not Robinson, where there was a concededly lawful stop. This is contesting the stop in the first instance of 30 people, and that troubles me to some extent, and I can see you bothered a little bit too, because you got to walk a line on this thing. You can't be in a bar with a gun. If you get in a fight and someone sees you walking and know you got a gun, you can be stopped just because you have the gun? It could have been anybody. Is that not correct? Am I not articulating that right?
Well,
it could have been anybody standing on, you could have been at the bar having a drink. Someone knows you got a gun because they know you carry a gun. They may just know you, or they could see it. They could actually see you have a gun, which you may have a concealed weapon permit. It's legal the whole bit. They tell the police can stop you. And the only basis I can see, he got the gun. And there are a lot of folks that thinks that's a good thing, but I don't know how you argue that. I'm not sure how that goes across for a person who has a right to carry a gun.
And I understand the court's concern. I would submit, Your Honor, that is not this case, because you have, again, the information about the fight that came in.
Don't you have also at least the implication from the call that the gun was visible in connection with this fight? It doesn't say, it's not a long, drawn-out deposition. It's in the narrative, but you have at least a reasonable interpretation of the information provided was that you have a big fight, you have someone with a gun that is visible in that, and then you have someone knocked out. Then the guy gets to the scene and he's given specific information about this particular individual who is then found, a block or so away. So doesn't the call about someone being seen with a gun in connection with the fight at least give a reasonable suspicion that that gun is being used in connection with the fight?
Well, I would agree, Your Honor, and I would say that...
You sure you want to agree with that? Because think about what that says. It says someone saw a gun, and you got to really do a lot of inferring to say it's nothing that says he used the gun in any way. And reported there's a gun at a fight. They get to the scene, says that guy has a gun. He can then be stopped. Everything is on the gun. There's nothing here but gun. If you want us to go that way, I'm just saying, are you sure that's what you're saying? Because I don't see any, the fight itself applies to all 30 folks there. Everybody there is fighting. The only difference with this man, he's supposed to have a gun. And which I'm just having some conflicting feelings on that. I mean, I feels like to me, maybe from a common sense, yeah, you should, but I'm thinking of the law on it. You sure you want us to write that?
And Judge, what I'm saying is when the initial call came in, it's reported as a large bar fight, but almost immediately the information that comes to the officers is that they have overheard that someone said they had a gun. That links this gun.
Ask you about that.
Yes,
that
Your Honor.
Someone said they had a gun, and it might be incorrect to parse a CAD report. I don't know how exact the language is when people report these things, but I read it as it says, advised, heard someone say they had a gun. So in the lot, about 30 people involved, heard someone say they had a gun. I read that as I heard someone with a gun say they have a gun. So I'm in a fight. I hear someone else in the fight say, I've got a gun. Am I reading that the right way? It's not that someone said they saw someone with a gun. They heard someone declare, I have a gun, and that suggests that person is threatening or interested in using that gun, or they're not just walking in the park and saying, I got a gun. They're in the middle of a fight saying, I have a gun. Am I reading that right?
Well, Your Honor, I think there are two interpretations of that statement, as the district court noted at our argument. That could be read that someone overheard someone say, hey, I have a gun. It could also be read to...
Where is that? Where's the language that someone said?
That's 139 of the JA.
Of the JA? Someone said, but not this defendant.
Specific,
is
Correct, Your Honor. The initial call. The initial call as it came in advised, heard someone say they had a gun. And again, that could be interpreted one of two ways.
That wasn't the tipster. That was the tipster who said it?
That was the initial call, Jim Smith, who called
in. Someone said somebody has a gun.
Correct, Your Honor.
He didn't see it. Somebody says.
Correct. And that is probably a good interpretation of the information that's provided to the officers. But the importance of that tip coming in conjunction with the fight is the proximity of it. That helps link the gun to the fight, which differentiates this case from a simple case, hey, a man with a gun. Again, I hear
a man whom someone says had a gun, not a man with a gun. I'm just trying to write this opinion. I'm looking at all these facts. Every one of them going to go into the opinion. And anybody reading this, you can try to parcel it and call it totality of the circumstances, reasonable suspicion, all you want. It's going to come down to he's got a gun.
Correct. And
that's all it's going to come down to. And you can dance around it all you want. And try to infer facts and bring in all other stuff. It's not done in other cases to that degree. You cannot do that. I mean, there are a lot of cases that overturn these type of things. And my question is, if this man did not have a gun, would he have been stopped?
I would submit if the bystander comes up to Officer Howard and provided different information and did not simply say he had a gun, it's entirely reasonable that he could have been stopped.
So imagine that the CAD report says, in the lot, advised about 30 people involved, advised someone was wearing red pants, advised one suspect knocked out laying on the ground. Would they then go try to find the person wearing red pants? Because it suggests that person's involved in the fight and involved with a person knocked out laying on the ground.
I think under those circumstances, Your Honor, it would be reasonable for the officers to respond and try to find somebody.
Without any information that the guy in the red pants was the one that knocked him down.
Well,
no connection. What if he says, I saw three guys, one with red pants, white pants, and blue pants in here. They were Chinese, Indian, and Hispanic. Do you go and stop all three? I just saw him in the bar, in this Huntington bar, where you got 30 folks in there fighting. And by the way, this is not in the record, but is this a bar in which everybody's all black?
Again, Your Honor, the record is silent to that. I certainly have no knowledge that it is a judge. This is, if I could comment outside of the record, this is a bar that's located on 4th Avenue in Huntington in an area where there's a lot of college bars. And it's in close proximity to Marshall University. And again, that information's not in the record. I certainly appreciate the court's concern. Again, outside of the record, I would probably characterize it as a college bar more than anything, Judge. And I'm going back and maybe repeating myself at this point. The initial call that came in is really crucial in this case. And it's the information that's provided about that gun that helps link this defendant to the fight. When you look at the proximities in this case, that call comes in. Officer Howard is at that bar within minutes. And he almost immediately is able to relay this suspect description. Officer Felix described it as a suspect as it was called out to him. He almost immediately is able to relay the suspect description based on information provided to him at the time. So we have two separate reports of this firearm. One of the reports that specifically links it to this defendant description. And what the government is saying is that if you're an officer in Officer Black's position, having the knowledge of the facts that he has, it is entirely reasonable for him to conclude at that point when he sees this defendant within a minute, he testified, of receiving that suspect description, this defendant less than a block away from the bar, walking in the same direction that was reported to him. It's entirely reasonable for Officer Black to conclude that that defendant was involved in this fight where there is a reported victim. Beyond that, it's entirely reasonable to conclude, whether he used the gun in the fight or not, that he was armed and dangerous. And
I have the concern that how does this affect other types of cases? And this is not a Section 1983 case, of course, but when you're dealing with the clearly established prong in Section 1983, the opposite of it is, in this case, would be, well, from now on, the police officers can go in, if you got a big fight in Huntington or any other place, 30 folks involved, you can get a tip from a guy that simply says, there's a guy with red pants on with a gun, and you can stop him. And you said, oh, it's the totality of the circumstances. There was a fight, but we don't have any information this guy was involved in the fight. There was a guy knocked down. We don't have any information this guy knocked him down. There was a gun. No information that a gun was used in it. We can certainly try to infer. We can do everything else. And we can say somebody said this guy had a gun, but there's no information a gun was used in the fight. That becomes clearly established that the officers can do that. So from henceforth, whenever you have a fight like this going on, you can stop someone with a gun. I don't see how you get around it. All you got to do is add all these other little facts in there. And you're going to have cases in it in which the facts are going to be a little closer. He was involved in the fight. And does that change it? That he was involved in the fight? Because if you don't say the gun was involved in the fight, And does it have to be a gun, or could it be a Coca-Cola bottle? That's a dangerous weapon too, a stick. He had a stick in his hand. And I'm wondering, does it change it? Is it a gun because it's a gun, or is it because you've got a lot of dangerous weapons out there that you could have? And that's the troubling part of this case. And I mean, we will definitely grapple with it. As you can see, we are grappling with it. Judge, do you have further questions?
I don't. Thank you.
Well, Your Honor, I see my time's expired. The government simply is asking the court to affirm the district court's judgment. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you.
Oh, my goodness, 8 minutes. Just a couple things, Your Honors. The totality of the circumstances is an analytical tool. It's not a magical invocation. And I think this court, starting with Foster and several of the cases that came after, has said that we have to really scrutinize when the government in these Fourth Amendment cases involve warrantless seizures and searches is trying to cobble together from the facts reasonable suspicion. They have to be particularly vigilant to not simply say, oh, well, the totality of the circumstances here, and use that as a way for anything to happen.
But we also have a standard of review that, you know, makes us construe this in the light most favorable to the government here. And you're certainly correct that we can't just cobble together a bunch of innocent circumstances. I mean, the law, we have some law to that effect. And we can't have something that, you know, would essentially implicate law-abiding citizens. The question here is when you have a report about a fight and the report that someone saw a gun in connection with that and that someone was knocked out, is those two things, I mean, that's not just cobbling stuff together, that's talking to a report and then seeing a individual come up to a police officer within minutes given a description of a person that is somewhat consistent with that, certainly the gun part of. So, I mean, yeah, you do, I think Judge Wynn is right. There probably is some inference that needs to go on to that the gun was displayed perhaps in some way or a reasonable suspicion that it was displayed. But doesn't the law let that type of inference take place?
I think there needs to be more for that inference to be made. And I think the crux of maybe our disagreement is that link
Right.
Between the fight and the gun.
You feel like it needs to be a more explicit link to how the gun was used.
Right. Or at least, let me put it this way, not maybe specifically that the gun was used in the fight, but that the person who had the gun was involved in the fight. Judge Wynn, I think it was you who asked the question, would there be reasonable suspicion to stop Mr. Mitchell in the same circumstance if there had not been a report of the gun? I think the clear answer to that is no.
Well, if he had a stick.
Well, a pointy stick, you never know.
Well, all kinds of things could be.
Can be deadly weapons. That's true.
So, I mean, it's not just, we can't make it just a gun. Because if you just make it a gun, you got a problem. But even though Judge Qualibon used the word in connection with, you got to really read something to say in connection with. All it says is got a gun.
Yes, Your Honor.
I don't know if he used it on anything. This is the most bare-bone case you could probably get on it. And if we go here, it really can go a lot of places. Not saying we won't, but I'm just saying.
I think that's true, Your Honor.
That gun is what this case is about.
I would agree with that. And one of the things I wanted to point out in talking about the fight and everything, my colleague across the aisle described Mr. Mitchell as leaving the scene, which has this implication like, you know, you rear end somebody and then back off and streak away before the cops get there. The fight happens at closing time. The bartender or the owner or whatever has said, you don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. So that's what Mr. Mitchell was doing. Again, he wasn't running. He wasn't making sure he wasn't followed and everything. I'll conclude with this. I'll go back to what I started off with. This court has said in warrantless searches, the burden's on the government to prove that the Fourth Amendment was complied with. I don't think in this case the government can meet that burden. And so I ask this court to reverse Judge Chambers' decision. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank both of you. We'll come down, greet you, and proceed to the last case of the day.